goes in for Dory Monson here on this President's Day, Fastest 15. Part of the show, Fastest 15 Minutes of Radio happening right now. And we begin with an update on Tim Iman. For those of you who have been living in a self-induced local news cave, refusing to look outward, you have not yet seen the video of Tim Iman, anti-tax initiative guru, at a Lacey office depot, where he is, shall we say, he's looking around. He seems to be looking to see if there's anybody else around, and are there any other store employees there? Is there anybody watching him? And then he walks off into the walks off through the store security. You know how they have those little things that beep if you leave the store without paying. He walks through that into the little lobby way between the two sliding glass doors, and he sits in a chair that's on display. And then he twirls around three times in the chair, and it looks like he's trying to look through the window to once again see if there's anybody around. And I say this as someone who I respect a lot of what Tim has done. I would consider myself to be friendly toward Tim, although, you know, I mean, we always greet each other in you know, when I see him at public events or whatever. Haven't really done much socially, but we've gone out to dinner a couple of times. I liked him. I think that he's done some great things. I think he is his own worst enemy most of the time, although Bob Ferguson is rapidly approaching the number one enemy on that front. But in this case, the video is quite damning. Tim's looking around. It looks like he's looking around to see if there's any store employees there. Seeing none, he goes and sits in the chair. And then he twirls around three times. He's clearly looking through the window to see if there's anybody that might be watching him in that way. When someone else enters the store, he takes that opportunity, immediately stands up and wheels the chair out. So
and
now
he comes back in, buys a printer or exchanges a printer, and then acts weird. And I mean, the story doesn't get better after that.
It's weird. He walks through the anti-theft devices. He reclines, spins, then takes the chair out. About a minute later, he then goes to the store where he scans some documents. Then he does his printer stuff. Then he does the exchange and buys two new ones, by the way, for about $250, according to these reports. Now, eventually the store people, this is why the Darwin Awards are generally reserved for only people who die in the act of doing something foolish. But if there were a Darwin Award for criminal behavior, if this ends up being found as criminal behavior, there would be an award on this one, because when they find out the chair is missing, they review the store security cameras. You've got Iman in his usual T-shirt, which is the bright orange initiative T-shirt, and his face is already really recognizable, but add the T-shirt to that and it's unmistakable. He also used his store rewards number for the purchase, and his personal credit card, and his phone number to identify himself in the rewards. So there's no effort on Iman's part to hide his identity. It's just right there, plain as day. So Iman, since the story came out, he wasn't saying anything, and we're waiting for the prosecutors to review this case. Apparently, they've got like 3 years to decide whether to charge
or not. And Dory and I talked about this on Friday when it came out, and I texted him,
yeah,
and he never texted me back.
Shocking.
Other than I did receive this email,
yeah,
that you have.
You got this is the email that we've received. Quote, I just called the Lacey Office Depot, who referred me to the Lacey Police Department. I'm expecting a call from the officer in charge to explain what happened. I will cooperate fully in this process and will do whatever is required of me. That's the Iman response. Now, I was speaking
with... It doesn't sound great. It doesn't sound... I mean, I don't know what the excuse is going to be, but I'm sure he'll have one. But that didn't sound good.
Well, it's not great. When you're saying, though, that you're going to explain what happened, generally, I mean, I don't know why his lawyer would say you're not allowed to say, well, look, I meant to buy it. I was putting it in my car because it's heavy. There's nobody there to help me with it. So, and although, frankly, the chair doesn't look heavy and it's actually wheeled out. It's the display model. It's on wheels and there's this quick action. So he wheels it out and has it in his car, and then he goes back in and buys this stuff. It's a very difficult situation. I hope for Tim's sake that there's something extra that he could put, but barring some kind of I had extra store credit and I was going to apply the store credit to this, and then, you know, just there's just not much wiggle room here, particularly when you watch the video and see him looking around. It's very damning. Now, I don't know what would lead him to do such a thing. You know, good people do stupid things from time to time and embarrassing things. But you know, the $70 theft, it's, you know, they're going to decide whether to prosecute a guy like Tim. I don't see how it doesn't happen, right? Because you've just got a giant red flag on yourself, and it's pretty bad. Now, one of the interesting phenomenons to me was reading the comments, like on the Cairo television story. I was reading some of the comments last night and on Facebook, and you had people who loved what Tim has done initiative-wise were saying, hey, what a total crock. We need to hear the rest of the story. The media shouldn't even be reporting on this yet. And I thought, look, Like I say, I've been friendly to Tim's initiatives, and I think that many of them anyway, and I think that he's done some great things. However, there's no way that the media would sit on this story with the video if, well, just saying that loud, I guess they did sit on a much worse story with the mayor of Seattle. But other than Ed Murray, if they had the video of someone shoplifting and doing something so foolish, they would show the video and they would report it, even though the prosecutors haven't made up their mind. They just would. They would say, well, he's under investigation. This is the story. And then people would have to make up their mind. In fact, in the same newspaper that broke the Iman story, there was a story about a former state legislator that was alleged to have been drinking with an underage relative. And so there's a story about that. Now, the question that former legislator put to the police was, or put to the paper was, hey, I'm not even in the legislature anymore. Why is this news? Well, it's news in part because you're a former legislator. That's why. And the public loves this kind of hypocrisy story. You know, like in this case, frequently people who are anti-tax will say taxation is theft. You know, well, so are other things. And so, you know, theft is also theft. And that becomes a story. So, Iman's had a number of troubles lately. I think, you know, Bob Ferguson's been going after him for various things. I thought that Glenn Morgan, a citizen activist, put up a pretty compelling argument that the attorney general seems to want to treat other people that have done the same actions as Iman when it comes to initiative or campaign issues, treat them differently and with kid gloves, whereas Iman, it's, you know, throw everything but the kitchen sink at them. But all that's a separate issue. The interesting thing to me on the comments from Facebook was so many people wanted to say, one, that the media shouldn't cover the story. Two, that regardless of what happened, they love Tim and they love what he's done and therefore it doesn't matter. Or three, they didn't like what Tim had done and they just wanted to throw the book at him because of his politics. And I thought all three were troublesome. You know, one, you do have to, even if somebody's on your side and doing great things, that doesn't give them the right to do other bad things, right? We need to hold people to account. We need to make sure that they're not stealing from other people. And then, you know, if somebody's falling in this way, there is a part of you that, you know, I can see why a political adversary does something really stupid and you have a moment of joy. But at the same time, the human being in you should kind of take a step back and say, this is a sad situation. Right. I mean, here's a guy who's been talking about, you know, divorce. He's supposedly in bankruptcy. In fact, in the Seattle Times story, they report that he's got, a couple of $1 million in assets versus $3.2 million in liabilities. Although they also say at the end that he's been making more than $42,500 a month since May. I feel like $42,500 a month should be enough to pay for a $70 chair. That's got to be a typo, right? $42,500.
That's why I think either he's literally lost his mind or he did this for some sort of attention. I don't know. It's misguided, but I think that he'll probably be in some kind of therapy or something by the end of the week.
The orange shirt therapy. Tim, you've been wearing that same orange shirt now for at least 6 months. It's time to change that.
There will be a story, but yeah. I don't know how it's going to benefit him.
Well, who knows?
I'm excited to hear it.
I bet you are. You know, I don't wish ill for Tim. Like I say, I've appreciated many of his anti-tax efforts. And I think that a lot of the demonization of Iman, first of all, he revels in it. And he has liked to be the center of attention. That's very clear. That's the whole point of the orange shirt. I mean, the guy stages all kinds of things to make sure that he's getting attention nonstop. And I do think some of the aggression toward him is fairly unique and unconstitutional. There's this effort to try and get him out of the political process forever. I don't see how that fits his rights as an individual. But all that said, this particular issue, the Lacey issue, is something else. You know, they have to look at that differently, and he should be judged as any other individual would. Not as Tim Iman, citizen activist, not as Tim Iman, anti-tax hero, not as Tim Iman, anti-tax villain, if you're of that persuasion, but as Tim Iman, citizen. All that said, there is a part of you that will watch the video, and it's like an episode of The Office. It is cringeworthy, embarrassing. Watching it, I felt like I was watching Michael Scott shoplift a chair. Because as you're watching the video, you're saying, no, 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 don't. Oh, no, don't. Oh, oh. And then there's the twirl of the chair, which is almost like a little flare at the end. Mm-hmm. And then there's the get up and walk out. So all of that, it didn't take Inspector Clouseau to solve this particular mystery of where did the chair go. It was all pretty bad. All right. Fastest 15. Next story is Tacoma considering eliminating curbside recyclers amid market changes. The recycling in Tacoma may come to an end in part because China's stopped accepting plastics, right? China's letting plastic load up worldwide. Plastics that they used to take and recycle for themselves, they've stopped that practice. So it's made the increased cost of processing and other things more expensive than it's worth. And so Tacoma's considering eliminating curbside recycling amid other market changes. They've put out a survey to see what people would prefer. Most of the options come with an added surcharge. Option number one would eliminate curbside pickup and open two satellite drop-offs. Customers would pay an additional $1.33 a month for increased landfill costs. That sounded cheap to me, unless they're just planning to pick up trash. Like right now, as a Tacoma resident, they pick up trash and recycling with two big cans, right, on 1 week, and then the next week it's lawn clippings. It drives me a little nuts in the winter because you don't generally have that many lawn clippings in the winter except the weekend after Christmas when everyone's dumping off their tree. But other than that, it just means your trash is piling up unnecessarily. I feel like they could divvy that up a little bit more. But $1.33 more for option one. Option two would eliminate curbside glass recycling, and for some reason we'd pay $2.50 more for that surcharge as well. I don't understand that because I feel like you're doing less and now I'm getting charged more. How does that work? Then they say, well, that's because some people would be throwing away the glass. What, are you going to go through the trash and find the glass? You're not going to do that, right? It's not going to happen. So what's the deal? Why would I be charged $2.50 more for the glass recycling? Or figure out something that's a little more convenient. You know, the glass drop-off, you know, find a bin. You know how they have those clothing drop-offs that they used to in front of grocery stores until people just dump garbage there and steal things? Have the glass recycling in places where people could actually go and have one-stop pickup. Anyway, maintain full curbside recycling, option three. Again, a $3 monthly recycling surcharge, and then maintain full recycling plus. So maintain the full service as well as remove items from the city's commingled recycle list, provide satellite glass boxes, and then be charged more. That just sounds like we want to charge you more for everything. Doesn't sound like a solution to anything.
Here. Right, but so still they're not taking our garbage over there?
Well, they would take the garbage. They just wouldn't recycle the garbage.
I mean, China.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. China's
they're out.
Yeah, they're out for now. Maybe it's their way of saying, hey, world, if you're going to punish us for stealing your technology and various copyright infringements, we're not going to recycle your plastics anymore. I always look at this and you know, and I know you shouldn't believe what you see on the internet, but I too follow victims for this. Right. I mean, yeah, at the end of it, there's going to be fewer straws. There's no plastic bags. So what plastic do we have? Really, we got all that Amazon packaging, first of all. And then I was watching a Facebook video where they were making roads out of plastic and they were talking about how much better it was and they stay forever and they're more flexible. And of course, I'm sure there's a catch to it. Like it's not actually possible in most places, or it's like, you know, $1 million an inch, you know, so it doesn't work. But I feel like we should be able to come up with some use for recycled plastics, right?
This conversation went so off the rails of where I thought you were going to go with
it. Did you think I was going to go?
I don't know.
The extra money? I mean, the $2.50, I feel like I'd pay $2.50 more for a larger trash can. I mean, for crying out loud, Until I had kids, I had no idea just how much space used diapers for a month Well, actually, it's every other week. My garbage is full after week one, and I keep going up sizing, right? Thank God I have old neighbors who have hardly any garbage at all, because I walk over and I fill their can, just load it up with garbage. Yeah, I've got permission, but I've said, hey, you mind if I put some trash in your can? I used to sheepishly ask each time. He says, yeah, anytime. Now I just take him up on it, and that can is full every time. So all I'm saying is that the recycling is the least of my problems. The $2.50 sounds like a bargain, but the problem is if they stop recycling altogether, then I'm going to have another huge can.
I was going to say, your
full
can's
of cardboard.
Huge.
Yeah. So, and you can't burn anything in Pierce County. Otherwise, you could, you know, recycle it by, say, burning it in your burning the cardboard in your house for
heat. There you go.
But that's not going to happen. So, anyway, Tacoma, here's the thing. It all comes
We're
down
still going
to,
with this story.
I'm just saying,
oh
it all comes
gosh.
Down to
Moving
this.
On, up
more
next
money.
In the Fastest
more
15.
More money. I don't hear any music for the Fastest 15. So I feel like
there.
It's all, it's, I don't hear it. So it's just not happening for me. Story number three, Bill Gates thinks we should all pay more in taxes.
I paid in absolute more taxes, over $10 billion, than anyone else. But, you know, the government should require the people in my position to pay significantly higher taxes.
Every time I hear that, first of all, he sounds like he has a deep accent from somewhere, but he lives here and he grew up here.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does. He just sounds like from somewhere. I'm not saying where. I don't know, but
Sean
it sounds strange.
Sean turned up the music for you here.
Yeah, I appreciate it because now I hear something here. Secondly, though, whenever I hear a billionaire say, I should really pay more in taxes, I always think, who's stopping you, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Gates is a charitable person with a good heart. I appreciate the intellectual rigor with which he tries to give away his money. He and his wife, Melinda, they've done amazing things.
But if you'd like to donate to the national debt, do that.
Right. If you're thinking, my word, I've got $40 billion, you know, I should have been charged an extra three. So write a check. Nobody's stopping you. And that would apply, too, if you made $700,000 and you think, you know what, the government should have taken another $200,000 from me. That's an outrage. You know what? You could just write a $200,000 check right now and say, send it to the state on behalf of foster kids or something. Now, it wouldn't necessarily mean it would go to foster kids because the politicians use shell games and can use the money however they want. But you could do that. You could tax yourself.
It was not a progressive tax bill. It was a regressive tax bill. People who are wealthier tended to get dramatically more benefits than the middle class or those who are poor.
So, again, it's the kind of thing where when the upper classes are actually paying more taxes than everybody else and fewer people on the lower end of the spectrum are actually paying taxes at all, whenever you cut taxes, by definition, it's going to benefit the people that are paying more in taxes. That's how a tax cut will work. But it doesn't mean other people didn't benefit. It just means that the wealthy might benefit more, but that doesn't mean it harms other people, right? Just because one person is benefiting doesn't mean another person is harmed. That is the attitude of somebody like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who we'll talk about later here on the
We'll
Dori
continue
Monson
the Fast 15, yeah. The next segment.
There we go. David Bowe's in for Dori Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe is in for Dori Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. I guess it's fitting that the headline on CNN right at this moment is Republicans target leftward movement in the Democrat Party, because one of the poster politicians of that movement is the woman who has become known as AOC. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez told her Facebook Live audience this weekend she is just weirded out living in Washington, D.C.
But here in D.C., it's like so weird. It's like everybody is like a spy. Like, it's so bizarre. It's like you could go out to get a cup of coffee and the person that's like sitting at a table in the corner of the restaurant's like, you know, like, then they go and like they text all their friends that they saw so-and-so at this cafe, and it's like triangulation. And it's super weird. It's just, like, super weird. So New York is really interesting because there's a lot of anonymity out in public.
It's almost like that beauty contestant in Miss Teen USA from about 10 years ago or so, 15 years ago, when it was, 10 years ago, right? It was The one who said it's like the Iraq and the such as. Do you remember?
Such as, yep.
Yeah, such as of the Iraq. She's got a lot of got a like, a lot of likes here. And I think that AOC, Alexandria Congresswoman Cortez, has not yet figured out that part of it is her own celebrity status. She's now kind of a viral media sensation because she's young, she's beautiful, she's outspoken, she'll say weird things, she has no filter, she's, you know, so it's unusual when it comes to politicians. So the reason why she's got spies at the table is because she herself is news, right? So every time that she's going out, people are going to be tweeting about her because she's made herself news at this point.
And then even when she's not, she posts fake Facebook Live videos and makes herself news.
Right. When you're not on the news, then you make your own news via social media. And
so it's not super weird.
It's almost as though saying, you know what? I was at this restaurant the other day and there was nobody there. It was so bizarre. So basically, you're creating a video to document the one time when there was no cameras around to make sure that the cameras are always there for you. She also took the time to reiterate her own views on President Trump and his emergency wall declaration.
No matter how you feel about the wall, you know, I think it's a moral abomination. I think it's like the Berlin Wall.
I would so like to do a follow-up interview with her on the nature of the Berlin Wall. I mean, let's face it, that's just the kind of stupid thing that people say when they want to demonize their opponents. The Berlin Wall had multiple layers to it that had its design was to kill people who were trying to escape, not to keep people out, but to kill people who are trying to escape a tyrannical government. So the Trump border wall, which is designed to put a stop to illegal immigration, not legal immigration, and designed to beef up areas where people have been crossing the border illegally, it's not designed to kill anybody. As a matter of fact, the stated purpose is designed to save people from being killed in some cases, like families trying to escape oppressive lives elsewhere, going across the desert in dangerous situations, trying to move them toward legal options of a border crossing. So there really is the idea of comparing the Trump wall to the Berlin Wall. It's just stupid hyperbole. You might hate Trump. You might despise the wall. You might not like it. You might think it sends the wrong kind of message, perhaps. But by the way, even if the wall were fully built as Trump envisioned, the U.S. would still be treating people who arrive illegally better than people who arrive illegally into Mexico are treated on the southern border, on their southern border. So, you know, the kind of hyperbole being used here, you know, like, oh, it's just like the Berlin Wall. I'm not exactly sure that AOC knows what the Berlin Wall was actually about, so I guess that's still open. But if she does know, it's all the more inexcusable. And speaking of inexcusable, Joe Biden was in Germany over the weekend.
The America I see values basic human decency, not snatching children from their parents or turning our back on refugees at our border. Americans know that's not right. The American people understand, please, because it makes us embarrassing. The American people know overwhelmingly that that's not right. That's not who we are.
So you have Biden saying things, and according to the press, when Biden is saying what he's saying there about the United States, that this isn't who we are, he's forgetting that Obama and his, their own policies did some of the very same things that he's now critical of President Trump over. But Biden then says he was speaking as a citizen. And according to this story that we have here, the media tries to hype it up as maintaining a longstanding unspoken policy of refraining from criticizing the sitting president while on foreign soil. And I thought, how often do you see a mainstream press story go out of their way like that to defend somebody? Like, oh, well, he was speaking as a citizen, not really critical of Trump, even though everybody knew he was critical of Trump, and he's going for the applause there. What that really was it's yet another trial speech on the part of Biden. He wants to run for president. He wants to sound tough, talking about foreign policy. The closest Biden will ever come to being president, now that he's not vice president, is just talking about being president, because I think while he tends to poll very highly among Democrats, in general, comparatively speaking. Every time previously he's actually gotten into a race, he plummets from there and goes nowhere. And it's because he's all talk and all bluster, and then he kind of fades into insignificance, which is pretty much where I expect him to end up in 2020. Robin Roberts, who interviewed Jussie Smollett, he's the star of the television show Empire, who claimed that he was attacked in a hate crime. She interviewed Smollett last week, and she's defending the decision to do so.
This case is ever evolving, head spinning, changing. Oh, yeah. When I sat down with Jussie, it was Tuesday night in Chicago at the time to give his first account, publicly give his first account of what he said happened. And we have to remember, at that time, on Tuesday, police officers were saying that his account was consistent, it was credible, and that he was being cooperative. Now, this was all before the interview aired on Thursday, and then we found out about the brothers.
Okay. So,
yeah, nice try. I think we all knew right away. A lot of people knew right away, and there was at least some skepticism. And
a lot of people didn't want to say skepticism.
She wasn't very hard on him.
No, she was not hard on him. And there was too much eagerness to believe anything that somebody says. And we see this with various crimes, particularly these kinds of crimes where there's a political angle to it, where people – and I used to keep track of these when I was doing a regular show, how many different times people would claim there's some hate crime or horrible thing that happened to them, and it turned out that they're doing that to themselves. You know, and the most horrifying incident of that I saw was a young man who claimed that he was attacked by anti-gay bullies. And what he had done is he had smashed his own face on a curb in order to create the wound. Did you ever see that? This guy, I remember.
I saw it in Reservoir Dogs. Well, seen in Reservoir Dogs.
In this case, the guy actually did a flip. You know, like he stood there and then did a flip in order to make his face hit the cement. I mean, it caused me pain just looking at it. And by the way, that was one of the few I was convinced was actually real because of the severity of the wounds. But when people make these kinds of fake hate crimes and they're designed to silence other people, what they're trying to do is say, well, I've got a different position on this issue or that issue, and what I'm trying to do is make it so that anybody who speaks out against me on this political side of things is the equivalent of whoever it is that committed this horrible violent act. And so it's really designed to silence people. It's like a political crime. It's also disrespectful and horrible for people who experience actual hate crimes and targeting. And so these are the kinds of things that I think deserve punishment and are not getting enough of it. Too many times I've read of people putting graffiti on their own doors, their own cars or whatever, and then they walk away. The authorities decide not to press charges. The amount of investigation that goes into this, community speculation, demonization of others, all of that undermines society, and they should be punished. This guy, when he claimed he was cooperating with police and then you give the police partial phone records, that immediately screams there's a problem here, right?
Oh, there's every part of the story is a problem.
And the MAGA hat thing where he claims, well, I didn't say MAGA hat. Well, I did say MAGA hat. It seemed to go all over the place on the MAGA hat thing. But everything about it sounded like something that a left-wing scriptwriter would have written about a conservative attacker, not something that somebody would actually say.
Just two white guys out with bleach and a rope looking for someone to attack.
If you do have two white guys out with a rope and looking
in
bleach and somebody looking to attack in Chicago, the odds are the severity of the wounds would be much greater, and there'd be added danger. Let me put it that way. None of this story smelled right from the get-go. So, Robin, maybe she needs a new producer. Nicole, call her up. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. One of the more powerful stories I've read has nothing to do with Trump, nothing to do with any Democrat potential challengers in 2020, nothing to do with the the efforts on the part of Governor Inslee, who we'll hear from next hour, challenging President Trump, or Attorney General, who's so desperate to be the next governor, doing his grandstanding against Trump. It's much more local. It's much more personal, and it should easily transfer over to any political persuasion. And that's the story of how Washington State handles runaway foster kids. It's a truly heartbreaking story in the Seattle Times about a 14-year-old girl. She's not named for obvious reasons. She's looking for a family. She's found none. Her mom died of cancer. The one aunt that she could stay with sounds like has Parkinson's or a similar disease, and it doesn't really work. So she's been in and out of the foster system. And they've tried to find places for her to stay, and she runs away. And the latest is that she's been running away toward a man in his 20s, and she's been living in tent encampments with him. Is, you know, alongside the freeway, you see those tent encampments, and it's very disturbing. The state fears that there could be a nature to that relationship that would be illegal. I tend to side with that, particularly since when, if you read the entire story, when other people in an encampment were asked about this couple, when they're trying to track this young girl down, they said that they did know them. They saw the girl. But when people realized that she was only 14 and their age disparity, they basically ran the guy off. And so they're still looking for this young runaway, and she's looking for a family. She's looking for people to belong to. And what happens in Washington State often is when a foster kid runs away, they can end up with a warrant out, and they get arrested, handcuffed, shackled, and they are put into a facility that's like a jail except for non-criminal behavior. And so it describes how she was placed in a separate wing for non-criminal detainees, often alone. And she knew the jail wasn't as bad as the grown-up variety. She said she didn't like the graffiti that spoke about gross things, the blood stain on her mattress, or the handcuffs and shackles that she briefly wore. She said, "I did nothing wrong." And people haven't been able to find a place for her to go. She was introduced to the idea that there's a street mom out there for her. She didn't quite get along with the street mom, and apparently ended up with this other fellow, the 20-some-odd-year-old on the road. And she's still missing. And the story is about her situation. Ross Hunter, the secretary of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, who's been trying to figure out what do you do in this situation. Washington tends to arrest more of these foster kids than other places. But the challenge is, you know, it sounds horrific, sounds awful, but if you've got teens that are intent on running away, incarceration might be the least of their problems. You know, this young girl's now with somebody in their mid-20s in a tent-like environment. I cannot imagine that jail is not a better place for her. And yet, it's a failure on our part that these kids can't find a home to stay in, some place for them to go back to again and again where they have the structure and the love that they need to thrive. And it's a big challenge for both parties of the legislature and for Ross Hunter, the head of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. It's a must read.